Hello, this is Tamiko Faison, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast dedicated to showcasing and supporting therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world who are leading in their space. And I am so, I'm just awestruck. I've already told our guests today that I am awestruck because, well, one, this is the first time I do have someone actually who is from Nigeria. Commutes back and forth between Nigeria and the U.S. But I'm awestruck. She's beautiful. She's absolutely gorgeous. When you see the picture, you're going to agree with me. But also her bio, which I'm going to read. I'm not going to read the entire bio, but I'm going to read a lot of it because I think it's important to know what she has accomplished. And then I'm going to share a story because I'm impressed with her bio. Like I said, I'm awestruck at how beautiful she is and what she's been able to accomplish. And then I'm also just very humbled at an experience that I want to share after reading her bio. So my guest is Victoria Amu. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
Your last name? Okay. And again, this is the eve of Thanksgiving, and I cannot be more thankful tonight to have a powerhouse who has agreed in the midst of her extremely busy schedule to join us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for agreeing. I really appreciate it. Miss Victoria Amu was born in Lagos, Nigeria, and she is a USA-trained occupational therapist. Presently a doctoral candidate at the prestigious Boston University in the U.S. Shout out to Boston University. That's where I met her with Dr. Karen Jacobs. Shout out to Dr. Karen Jacobs as well. Her passion for occupational therapy is in women's health with an objective for advocacy and social justice. This led to her heeding the clarion call and return to Nigeria with a vision for social justice and equality. She began resuscitating the dying OT services in Nigeria by joining the University of Benin Teaching Hospital and changed the department from two open spaces with four OT assistants as staff to a department with six treatment areas: neuro rehab, pediatrics, orthopedic and splinting, mental health, ADL, and vocational rehab. All this is making me smile. She worked not only as an HOD, which you'll have to tell us what that is, Victoria, an HOD.
Head of department.
Head of department, okay. But also supervised clinical postings of OT and OTA students, besides her regular routine practice of an astute therapist. In a bid to extend OT service to clients and patients not in the mainstream of government hospital services, Ms. Amu became a consultant to the Nigeria National Petroleum Corporation Hospital, Benin Zone, and she did that from 2008 to 2011. In further pursuit of her advocacy and social justice, she joined the Edo, is that pronounced correctly?
Yes.
Edo State Hospital's Management Board and made history by establishing the first OT department in Nigeria within a state hospital. She is presently the director of OT and a member of the Central Hospital Management Committee. She continues in her quest of making notable advancements in OT. Today, occupational therapy practice and service delivery in Nigeria is synonymous with her name. How about that? She strives daily to integrate OT into 205 tertiary hospitals across Nigeria. She is always at the forefront in advancing a revised curriculum of study for Bachelor of OT in Nigeria and increased employment of entry-level OT graduates into hospitals and the champion for the new salary scheme of service for OTs and OT assistants. Internationally, her contributions to OT development in Africa cannot be quantified, and I do believe that. She has represented Nigeria in Yokohama, Japan in 2014. She led a team of OTs in Ghana in 2017. She has a plethora of publications in OT, but also systemic diseases and breast health in reputable journals and newspapers to her credit. She is also a public speaker. She does seminars and workshops. And in 2018, Victoria was a recipient of the World Federation Occupational Therapy Merit Award in South Africa. She's dancing. I wish you could see her because I'm like, she looks like doing all this stuff. And then she looks, like, I told her, I said, looks like you're here to go walk the red carpet. I mean, she looks that good. She is a member of the Lions Club International, Medical Reserve Corps of the USA, American Red Cross, Salvation Army, and co-coordinator of the South Civil Society for the Eradication of Tuberculosis. I love this philosophy. Persistence breaks resistance. Persistence breaks resistance, which she says makes her a well-adjusted individual to cope with the everyday challenges that come her way. She describes herself as a Christian, and she has four children. And so I told her, I said, well, you know, I'm reading her bio, and I'm like, okay, she probably is just doesn't have children. You know, I just made that up in my mind. And then I read, she has four children. She loves reading, listening to music, and socializing. And I asked her if I could share this story, because she and I are in class together. And, you know, sometimes I can go into the woe is me. And I think a lot of us can go into the woe is me without realizing how privileged we are. And so in class one night, we were all talking, and I think we asked you, you know, what time was it in Nigeria, Victoria? Because I'm like, oh, we got to do a class at 9 o'clock. You know, it's time I'm usually getting ready for bed. And you said it was what, 3 o'clock in the morning?
Yes.
3 o'clock in the morning, but that's not all. So she's doing class at 3 o'clock in the morning. She's not complaining. She's alert. She's attentive. She's participating. But then she says, I'm at a hotel because we only have 3 hours of electricity a day where she lives. And that just made me take a step back to say, wow, you know, how dedicated, like all this that you're doing, you're a mom, you're leading, you're commuting back and forth from the US to Nigeria, and yes, you know, just changing and growing the profession in a country where you don't have the same privileges that we have. So to me, I was just like, how dare you? Like, how dare you? How dare to myself, you know, how dare I complain about anything when, like you just said before we got started, like we have, I don't even think about electricity. You know, I just turn on the power, you know, and I get mad if my internet is slow. Like, what's wrong with this internet? We're on Zoom all the time. Why is it faster? You know, but you have to take advantage of 3 hours.
Your clothes in the US are always ironed. That 3 hours, when electricity comes, everybody races to iron their clothes for the next day or the next week.
Wow.
Utilize as much as you can.
Wow. So I did read your bio and share that story, but can you tell us in your own words about Victoria, who you are, and how you became interested in OT?
Victoria was born in Lagos, very humble beginning. My father was a police commissioner, which means that has put us in the affluent area. We live in the affluent area. We live with the elites, so we get to go to school. But on this hierarchy, I am the last born of my father. So by the time I was born, my father was already about 60 years old. So he has worked, he was about retiring. So all those privileges that the older ones had, I did not get much of it. But I had a mother who was sufficiently educated. And for every day of my life, she would always tell me, you need to go to school. I'm one person who likes socializing. I'm one person who likes music. So sometimes I get drifted away in socializing, drifted music and all of those things. And my mother would just hold me by the ear and she said, hey, you got two options. Either you go to the strip club or you go and read. You have no other alternative. So that had always been in me from when I was a child. So I finished my high school, had some issues, a little bit of issues that propelled me, negative issues that instead of it depressing me, it propelled me, made me stronger, and helped me to unravel who I was. Because at that point in my life, just after high school, my mates were going into college. I wasn't going into college. I was having a baby. So everybody at that point felt life was over. Usually in developing countries, life is over, you know, for you, for for a lady who gets pregnant, and I was raped, you know, so I got pregnant. And my mother said, no, you're not taking out the baby, you're going to have the baby. I want to go to school. No, you have the baby. And after I had the baby, my mother just took the baby from 1 week old. And she said, go back to school. You know? So in Nigeria, I read secretarial studies. You know, went to school for about 2 years. I became a secretary in a bank. You know, so I worked there minimally. Then I came to the U.S. So when I got to the U.S., in trying to scan what profession, everybody was saying, go to nursing, do nursing. They have more money. You have more job, you know. I went into the career development and student aid office in LaGuardia Community College. That was where I started, New York. So I opened up the pamphlet and I was reading, physical therapy does this, OT does this, you help them with activities of daily living. I said, I think this is what I do. What is activities of daily living? You help them brush their teeth, you help them, okay. How do you help somebody brush their teeth? In the country where I come from, when someone is sick, they don't do anything for themselves. Their family carry them. So how do you get somebody who just wants not to be independent, to be independent and do their daily life skills by themselves after an illness? So that was puzzling for me. Remember, I came from a country where disability is glorified. You know, if a parent is diagnosed with a disorder, the parent just sits down there and say, oh, I have 5 children. One will clean my leg, one will take care of my arm, one will take care of my head. So there's nothing like restorative therapy. They don't even want it. The children will say, I will do it for my mom. So seeing that, I said, is it possible to get someone who doesn't want to be independent after a disorder? Okay, so let me do it. So I started off as an occupational therapy assistant in LaGuardia. I finished. I now went on my field work. I finished my field work. I now went for my first day of work. And my first day of work was in a special needs school. That had an impact on me all my life. I'm in a special needs school, and the therapist tells me, Victoria, you're going to have this patient. Her name is so-so-so-so-so. She's 40 years old. Our goal for her is self-feeding. I said, okay, she can't feed herself. I said, no, you have to do hand over hand, because when she tries to feed herself with the spoon, she doesn't know or understand that she needs to chew the food first before scooping the next one. So she'll take the first one into her mouth, take the second one into her mouth without chewing and swallowing. So she chokes. So we have modified the task to giving her a small teaspoon. So even if you're not watching her and she has taken the first scoop, the second scoop, she will not choke by the time you get to look at what she's doing if she has swallowed her food. So I said, okay. So I sat down near her and I was trying to feed her, and it was a battle because she had this hand motion and she wanted to bring the food in excitement to her mouth that she can feed herself. And after that therapy session, I told myself, I said, this is a 40-year-old woman. She's never had playmates like I've had playmates. I'm sure she's never had sex like I've had sex. I'm sure she's never had boyfriends like I've had boyfriends. And she's here, even when she's doing her menstrual cycle, somebody cleans it and washes it for her because she doesn't have enough cognition to clean up herself. Somebody dresses her, they put the pad on her. And I'm complaining that my life is bad. Mm. I say, girl, wake up. So that was it for me. And that's had a lot of impact in who I was going to, shaping my life and who I was going to become. So, like I tell everybody, I'm from the school where I believe the cup is half full. I never believe the cup is half empty, you know? So because I believe the cup is half full, you need to, you will fall. You make your mistakes, but yeah, keep going.
I really appreciate you sharing and being so transparent. When you talked about, you know, what happened to you and how you took that and, you know, you pushed past it, you had the support from your mom. And a lot of people, you know, I won't say a lot, but I'll just say in my experience, when there's been a history of trauma, it's like taboo, you know, to talk about it. But it's so important when you share and how it inspires other people, because we don't know who's listening to this, who maybe had similar experience and they don't have hope. And then also how you took that experience and, you know, you have this passion for women's health. And I've heard you talk in class about these young girls who, you know, they're married really young. And like, I remember you said, your mom said, what, there's two options, strip club or education. And then you see all these young girls that are taking the other route, and you didn't let your experience push you into that. You to push to help people not to go in that direction. So I really appreciate you sharing that. So then you also, you have this experience with this person, and then you say, my situation is not even nearly as tough as this person's situation. So here we are again about, you know, really being grateful for what we have and knowing that most of the time there's somebody who has more challenges than what we have. So now, you know, you have this experience like, this is the thing, I want to do OT, but then you rise, you know, to become this renowned leader. How do you go from, you know, I want to be an OT, a really good clinician, OT assistant to OT, to now I'm a leader? Can you talk about your leadership roles and how you got there?
When I finished the OT assistant school, I went into York College in New York, City University of New York. I did my bachelor's degree then. Then bachelor's degree was the entry level for OTs. And on the last day of school, we had this awesome professor, Ariana, I think he's still in York College. The last day of school, he said, everybody sit down, please. Get four pieces of paper. We did that. He said, write down what and where you think you are going to be in the next 5 years. Everybody say 5 years. Yes, I'm going to look forward. He said, no. Don't use your present situation to judge where you're going to be in the next 5 years. Think of you outside where you are. Think of you where you think you should be and you are not, and where you want to be in the next 5 years. And then write it in four different pieces of paper. Put one in your bag. Go put one in your closet in your house. Go put one in your car. Just drop it anywhere. We all did. And in that piece of paper, I still have it in my house, I wrote down there, finish OT school, take my exams, work in pediatrics, work in rehabilitation, then go to Nigeria and start OT school.
Wow, ambitious.
I'm telling you, for a fresh graduate, how do you do that?
Yeah, how do you do it? How did you do it?
How do you do that? So, but I finished like I did. Took my exams, did not have so much luck with my exams at the initial stage, took it again, then wrapped up myself, and then I went home on a visit one day, and I went to the hospitals. I was asking, do you have OT department? They tell me, what is OT? We only have physiotherapy. And I'm saying, you mean in this big country called Nigeria, there are so many, all the hospitals have physical therapy department. There are no OTs. Then when I go to the psych hospitals, you have a skeletal process of OTs there. You have assistants because you have these psych professors who have grants, and their grants require rehabilitation. And most of them travel out, and they know that there must be active OT participation in all of the grants that they write for. So all of the psych hospitals in Nigeria, like the major federal government owned, have OTs that are assistants. Or sometimes they just put somebody there and says OT, and all they are doing is carpentry, woodwork, printing, basketry. That's all they are teaching there. So I went on that visit, and then I came back and I told myself, no. There must be OT department. There should be. So within 5 years of graduating, I just wrapped up myself and started heading for Nigeria. When I got to Nigeria, I stopped in Lagos. Lagos is like the capital of Nigeria. There was a big psych center there. The big psych center runs a school, an assistant school. When I got to Nigeria, the assistant school is the only school that graduates assistants for psych facilities. There is a 4-year college for the bachelor's degree, but it had only one professor, and the professor can only take 4 or 5 students. So 3, 4, 5 maximum. So that's the schedule she runs. And the professor is 76 years old, was 76 years old then. So when I got in, when I came, relocated myself, left the US, I told myself, hey, setting up OT department and OT in another country will further restore patients, get them to good health, and then further enhance the profession. Living in America, I'm only one, a pinch, out of 10 million OTs. Going back home and actually resuscitating occupational therapy, making occupational therapy well known, and getting students to love occupational therapy and go into it as a profession. I think that's the best thing I can do for myself, and I'll be one. So when I got back home, it was me and 2 others, the woman at the university, and then one woman that comes in from abroad to do locum, to do 3 weeks in the assistant school. So we were only 3 occupational therapists. And out of the 3 of us, there were only just 2 of us that have at least a bachelor's degree in OT. The other one was an assistant who was taught in Britain, you know. So when I got in, I was told, come and work in the school and come and train OTs. I said, no, if you train those OTs, where are they going to work? No. I'm going to stay out here. We need more hospitals to know what we are doing as OTs first. When they understand what we are doing, then we can ask them to open up a unit and employ one OTR in that unit. So I started off in Lagos. I was in Lagos. It was a psych center. And because they were so used, you know, I trained in the US. So it was like I had wheels on my leg. I needed everything to change. I wanted everything. And they kept telling me, madam, please take it easy.
I said you were a powerhouse. That's how I described you coming in. I know you have to be when you're trying to break into a system where something has never been before. So as an OT in the US who really advocates for occupational therapy to break into spaces where we traditionally haven't been, you know, to create social enterprises, you do have to. You have to be persistent, and you have to be a, you know, like a powerhouse in order to merge. And so for OTs who are listening, this Victoria is a prime example of the possibilities of where OT can go. So just because OT is not in that particular space, and you know there's a need, and you know that OT can help this group, this population, these individuals, just because the OT is not there doesn't mean that's the way it has to stay. So you could be the person who makes that change, like Victoria has done in an entire country. And so they obviously at some point listen to you.
Yes. You know, so they say, madam, please take it easy. You know, we're just, you know, change is a wonderful thing. People don't agree to change. Change is one thing people don't like. They just want things to be the usual way. What do you guys do? Is it not basketry you do? I say, no, please don't tell me.
So education. Yeah, that's the name of the game. People don't know.
People don't know. So I would sit down. I would do during their lunch time. I'll tell the doctors that I want to meet with them. I'm going to do a seminar. I'm going to highlight our scope of practice. So I kept doing that. But, you know, it's a psych facility and they train assistants. So their energy is more towards assistants. So I did that for about a year and they did not listen to me. And I told them, I said, I'm going to leave this job. They said, why, madam? I said, if my professor decides to visit me from the US and says, Victoria, you went back to Nigeria, where are you working? I said, you mean? I'm coming on holiday. I want to be in your department. I want to see your department. I want to see the, you mean this place is where I'm going to bring my students, my professor? You know, you mean this is where I'm going to bring my professor? I said, no, in this place, the equipment are so obsolete. They don't, you know, they do not even want to buy tools, treatment tools. And I'm saying, madam, you want to buy the treatment? I said, no, I'll just give you the list. But they weren't conforming. So I just left them and came to my state, you know, like you leave New York and go to New Jersey. So I left Lagos and went to Benin. So when I got to Benin, because it's my state, you know, a lot of them know who I am. So they were more receptive, you know, to helping me out, like the MDs who were in charge of hospitals, you know, because everything in Nigeria, I told you, everything in Nigeria is a task. You must know the MD that will bring about the change. Remember, we had a class where we said we have different, what did we do? We had individual, we had those you can assess. You have country, you have states, you know. So that's how it is. You have different levels of persons you can assess. So because it was my state, I was already able to assess those at the political level. I was able to assess those in power. So it was easier for me to go into the hospital. And that's how I got my first job in that state. The job wasn't there. The man has never had any OT. He only knows that the psych department uses some assistants. They do carpentry, they do woodwork. He's never had OT. So I just walked into his office. And that's one thing being an OT helps you. You're able to negotiate. You know? So when you find something not there and it's supposed to be there, you must be able to negotiate it. So I just walked into the MD's office and I said, hey, I would like to see the MD. Do you have an appointment? I said, no, but I know that he's going to see me. My name is Victoria. I'm an occupational therapist.
I love it. I love it. I mean, what you're saying is filled with so many nuggets. I mean, you said you're persistent for a year, you know, so you didn't take, okay, everybody listening that wants to, you know, start this business or go into this new space, 2 months, you might not see a change in 2 months. You know, it might be 2 years. So you do a year and then you say, okay, now I need to change. And now I understand that this is about relationships. So if I go to this place, I have relationships with people and I'm probably going to be able to make more progress because of relationships. And you also said political relationships. And I know we talked about that in class before. Also when Dr. Amy Lamb talked about her experience with politicians and how OTs, that's important when we're looking at social policy and we're trying to, you know, enter into these spaces. And the other thing I really love is you said, you know, you gotta negotiate. You gotta be able to go in and be bold and be able to articulate the value, negotiate it, and create it. And you've done all of that and some. So I want to switch gears just a little bit, Victoria, and talk about diversity, because I know I'm sure it's a lot different in Nigeria than what we have in the U.S. The 2019 AOTA, American OT Association Workforce Survey, just recently came out. And for people of color, there's a decrease in numbers for some ethnic minorities. I think it was closer to 4% when they did it in 2015. And now we're at close to 3%. So we went backwards, but not a lot, but still in the wrong direction. What have your experiences been in terms of diversity? I'm sure it's different in Nigeria versus the U.S., but can you just speak to that and how you see that and how it's impacted you as a professional?
Diversity in the U.S. is very strong. When I entered the OT program, you had very few people of color. Very few people of color. LaGuardia, as an assistant, I didn't find anything challenging, but when I got into the BSc program in York, I had Professor Wimbley, late Professor Wimbley, as my professor. She's a woman of color. And we all used to be so angry in the class, you know. Meanwhile, the OT school, and that's what OT school is everywhere, is a boot camp, you know. But in York College, it was more. They don't even want to hear you're pregnant. They don't want to hear you lost your mother. They don't want to hear you lost your father. They don't want to hear all those. You can say it, but when you say it, you're not going to pass your class because it must be justified that your psychological made it impossible for you. The emotions you were going through made it impossible for you to pass your class. So it was an underlying unwritten rule, you know, which has helped shape me as a person. It makes it challenging for me to tell you if I have issues. If I have issues, I don't dwell on it. I just find a way out of it. So Professor Wimbley Edwards told us then, as women of color, so when we finished, we all said, why were you so hard on us? You're also a woman of color. It seemed like the department says you cannot have C. If you have C twice, they kick you out of the program. And that's what it was. If you had C twice, they kick you out of the program. I said, but we said, in other department, English, they have D, they even have F. So what was the issue? Why were you so hard on us? She said, you guys are students and women and men of color. In order for you to practice in the U.S., where you are, first of all, here, you have obstacles that is going to inhibit your practice. One, you are black. Two, you have an accent. Three, everybody will think that you have nothing upstairs. You are a dumb. So every single day of your life and practicing, you must always prove yourself. That's what you have. So you must be good.
That is so interesting that you're saying that, because that is a common theme amongst therapists that I talk to that are of color that say, I have to be 10 times better than everybody else I cannot get away with, you know, certain things that other people might be able to get away with. And I do have to prove myself, you know? Yes. And so it's interesting that that is the perception outside of the U.S. for people of color as well. When you go to the U.S., this is how you are probably going to be perceived. Yes. So you got to come with it. And, you know, if you've got something else going on in your life, figure out a way to deal with it and get over, yeah, because you're not going to get. It. Yeah. Wow.
So she would always tell us that. And then she told us that, hey, if you take your parents to a neurologist and you get there and you find out that that neurologist in school only passed with 50%, would you put the brain of your mother down for surgery? What if 50% that neurologist knows is the one that is good? And then he thinks that that's the one that is bad because he doesn't know the other one. And then does a wrong surgery. He said, that's why we always want the best in you. So that had helped shape me. So fast forward into Nigeria. Nigeria is a developing country. It's an African country where women are supposed to be heard and not seen, you know? So, like when I'm advocating for OT, when I just started talking about OT, all the men are, who is this woman? Why is she so bossy? What does she know? Go and call the physiotherapist. Until the day I told them in front, and the physiotherapist sitting, and I told them, I said, please, you can ask me about OT. Please don't ask me about physiotherapy. And please don't ask the physiotherapy about occupational therapies, because I know he doesn't have the body of knowledge that I have in OT. He doesn't have it. So he wouldn't be appropriate for him to answer questions on ADL or to recommend ADL. So everybody paused. So from that training in school, that helped me, you know, coming out into Nigeria, because women are discriminated against, women are abused, women are seen as empty heads, they have nothing to say, you know, the men know how to make insignificant a conversation, a serious conversation, and if you do not know how to tap it and redirect them, whatever you are discussing is gone with the wind. So that's the experience from school, from training, played its own role when I came back. And yeah, that's how I broke through all those leadership. All the students that I mentored, all of those that worked with me, the only thing they say is, looks like Mrs. Samu is not tired. She's always...
That's what I said.
I'm way tired. Because I'm always pulling and wanting and, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you're doing a lot and you're making it happen. And I'm just thinking about that training and the person that you said who told you, you know, you have to do more. And I don't think that's uncommon that people of color are doing, you know, they do a lot. And I think, I can't remember which podcast it was, but with another previous podcast person I was interviewing, it's like, it bothers some people. They're like, how is it that you can do all of that? Like, that's not possible, yes, that you actually can do all that. I'm like, oh, it's possible. Yes, it's possible because people are doing it. But maybe from your world and your space, you had the privilege that you didn't have to think about doing multiple things at one time. And so it does seem different to you. And that's why I think diversity is so important to educate people. I know in OT school, it was common to say, you know, you can't work. I was like, some people don't have a choice. You know, they have to work. Of course, the work needs to be flexible in order for you to be able to meet your academic requirements. But for some people, financially, they have to do it. I remember growing up working in tobacco 12 hours a day. Like, it was like, this is what you have to do. And so for me, I work in a lot of different areas, similar, not nearly as much as you, Victoria, but in a lot of different areas. But I can see that, like, your upbringing and what you're used to has paved the way for you to be able to work in multiple roles and be a really, really strong leader and make effective change politically. I mean, on so many different levels. So what advice would you give to therapists of color who are seeking to go into, let's say, you know, another person in maybe Nigeria or even the U.S., a person of color who wants to go into entrepreneurship or leadership positions? What advice would you give?
I'll say go for it. I'll tell any OT that the practice of OT itself has given you the foundation you need. It has enhanced your interpersonal relationship, your therapeutic use of self, you know, embodies your empathy in every situation. When we are in the clinic in Nigeria and I see a therapist and another therapist is complaining about another therapist and saying, oh, we needed to go do advocacy and this person is not interested. We needed to go do something and this person doesn't have empathy for situations. I tell them, I said, this person you're worrying about is not an OT. If this person you're worrying about is an OT, they would do those things. They will multitask. They would engage in reforming. They will be involved in doing all sorts of change. And they'll be interested in innovation because the world today is all about innovation. So OTs out there, get up. Get up from your tiny world of going to work 8 hours a day and coming back and doing overtime. Get out from that tiny world. It's tiny because the world is global. The world is so large, you know. Get out of that routine work of, let me go see my patient in the hospital. Let me go do this. Start thinking of innovative steps where you're going to take OT profession itself. Because the joy of doing that is humongous.
Yeah, I hear this think bigger, you know, from you. You know, get out from behind this one job description that, you know, I've got to go work with this client and think about that you are part of a bigger world. But even before you were making all this change, you had made up in your mind to think big, because when they asked you to write on that piece of paper, where do you see yourself in 5 years? You had a huge goal. You didn't necessarily have the plan or know exactly, this is how I'm going to do it, but you knew this is what I want to do. So you really were beginning with the end in mind. And I love that you're encouraging other people to do that, because if we think bigger, I feel like once we make the decision, I think there's a saying that says, once the student is ready, the teacher appears. But you got to make the decision. You know, you have to make the decision from the beginning to think big and believe that you are capable to accomplish whatever that big goal is. And the other thing I really love that you said, Victoria, is, you know, you are OT. So like, we learn all about all these different contexts. We have this OT process and these enabling skills and all these things that we learn about. I think originally a big focus was on individuals, but now we have the language individuals, groups, and populations, and we have all these dynamic contexts. So apply that to your big thoughts in terms of social policy change or advocacy, or, you know, whatever that big goal is. Apply those same skills that you're learning about that could be used for a client to the groups, the populations, and to, you know, like you said, just bigger spaces globally, like to really start thinking globally.
And then as OTs, you must always also learn to tap into raw fields. That's what I talk about, innovation. You must also, we do that in a treatment where if you have a stroke patient, you just know that once I do restorative treatment, once I do weight bearing on the affected side, I'm going to get, you should do that also with OTs. Look for OTs and be mentors to OTs.
Give back. Yeah. Give back. Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot that people can learn from, from what you have accomplished. I'm learning a lot just by, I mean, I'm inspired, but I'm learning a lot and always interested in what you have to say in class. Because you're tackling,
usually,
you know,
I don't say anything in class.
Well, when we get in a group together, I'm so excited. And so, like you said, in the beginning, there was not as much diversity. I think we still have a ways to go in terms of diversity. But one thing I love about our class is that there's people from all over the world. And to have a class where I look and I see all these different shades of brown faces, and I've never had that. I've never had it before. And I really appreciate that. We have students.
And you know, my being in that class is just because Dr. Karen Jacobs met me in South Africa at the Merit Award and said, Victoria, I said, yes, come to Boston University. I said, no, I can't do doctor. He said, Victoria, please go all the way.
She's great. I mean, she's a great advocate for
us. Oh my God. She has these fine eyes. She can see through. Oh, I said, no. She said, yes, Victoria, go on the website. Go and answer the proposal questions. Fill out your form. You won't take me. I won't qualify. No. I only have a BSc. You don't. No. She said, Victoria, please go on the website.
She knows. She knew. She knew that. I mean, you would contribute so much to society, but also to the program, you know, because students and professors learn from each other. And when we are in the breakout sessions and you talk about women's health and the things that the young ladies are up against in Nigeria, and I know that it's not straightforward. Like when you're talking about it, like this is not, I'm just going in and this is going to happen, because there's a culture that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you're like, this is what I'm going to do. You know, this is just so much of what you said. I'm going to start this OT school. I hear you when you're talking, like, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to get the doctors to refer. And you've got these different dilemmas that you sort of process and talk about. But I have no doubt that it's going to happen. So I appreciate, really appreciate how dedicated you are in spite of challenges. Anything else you would like the audience to know before we wrap up?
I want the OTs, especially, or your larger audience, do not stop. Keep going to school, getting knowledge. Some people can't do school. Look for something innovative that you are going to do and enable others to be able to get to the to their goals through that innovation that you are going to establish. So never stop. That's just what I want. Just keep going.
I love that. You said never stop, but you also said innovation. This was a new definition of innovation. You said innovation enables others. And I'm going to have to steal that, Victoria, because that's true. When you innovate, you open up opportunities for others. So thank you so much, Victoria, for being with us on this Thanksgiving Eve. I am, again, very grateful for your time, and but also very grateful for what you've done for the profession. And I'm going to continue to follow you. And is there anything we can do, you know, to support you in your roles?
Please, when you're on vacation, come to Nigeria and come and teach the students. Buy your ticket and come to Nigeria and come to the only OT school that is in Nigeria. Let those students get a feel of OTs beside me talking. When they hear somebody else,
okay, you
know, it's going to make a world of difference. You know, I always tell people, I said, one of the things that opened up my eyes as a therapist was going to the AOTA conference, you know. That I was like a kid. That was good. I was like a kid lost in the candy store. And then when I went back to Nigeria, I became the delegate, the World Federation for OT, Occupational Therapists, delegate, Nigerian delegate. And there was a congress in Yokohama, Japan, and I had to go represent Nigerian OTs. I was like a kid lost in a candy store. In fact, when I got to Yokohama, China, when I got outside, I pulled my shoes and I put my legs on the floor and I said, Victoria, is this you in Japan? I said, yes, it's me. You know? So, we must look for things. We must look for things that is going to blow the student, the young student's mind, that is going to give an everlasting impression for that young student, that is going to help the young student see more of the direction of where they are going to. So those were the two things that this thing. So every time I have the opportunity, I enable the therapist in my country to go on conferences, you know. I tell them, don't worry, I'll pay for your hotel. Just buy your ticket. Just come. I'll chip in for your hotel. You know, three of you can stay in one room. Just come. Because I know their world is not going to be the same. You know, can you imagine being in the conference and sitting next to the author of the book that I actually read to be an OT? You know, right. Sitting next to her, and she's just this humble self, you know, talking. And, you know, so for me, and I say, goodness me, this is awesome. Everybody should experience this. So I hope that I will see you in 2022 in France, World Federation for OT.
I like that. I've never been to France. I would love to be at France. And she's shouting out to you all, audience.
Yes. World Federation for OT.
2022, World Federation of OT. I like that.
And make sure you write an article, put your article for submission for oral presentation or poster presentation for World Federation for OT. 2022, France. Please come.
Three call to actions. 2022, World Federation of Occupational Therapy Conference in France. Register for it. Submit an article. Yes. Or present a poster.
Yes. Yes.
And then the one that you said before those was present to your students. So yes. I can put your, is it okay to put your email in the bio for this podcast? And then if someone is available to present, they can reach out to you.
Sure.
And it's only presentations. Are they only done in person or is there opportunity to do anything virtual?
Because of the COVID time, virtual would be okay.
Virtual is okay.
Yeah, virtual is okay. But if there's need for person, yes.
Okay, I would love to present at some point, Victoria, so we can talk more about that later. And I will definitely put your email in for everyone else. And once again, thank you for being with us, Dizzy.
Let's do something with this and put it at the Congress in 2022. Abstracts is going to start coming out. Need for abstracts is going to start coming out. So, let's do something together and put it out there. And all OTs, please, write articles. Get off your work.
Victoria will have you on top of the world, I'm telling you, on fire, powerhouse. So again, thank you. We're going to wrap up. And thank you all for listening. Thank you, Victoria, for being here. And remember her call to actions. And don't forget to subscribe. Until next time.
Thank you so much.